Well, hello. This is Hugh Culver with the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers. Thanks for being on the call today. Some of you, of course, are going to be enjoying this call live as we're recording it today, and some of you, of course, will enjoy it later as a recording. But either way, I think you're going to find this to be a really engaging conversation with David Meerman Scott, of course, is the best-selling author of The New Rules of Marketing and PR. Before we get started, I want to tell you a little bit about how this call is going to work and what you can also enjoy as far as the archive calls that we've had in the past. So we call this the Business Growth Series. It's a service for the members of the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers. We also have some non-members that are joining us today, which is also, I think, is great. You can reach the archives, access the archives for previous recordings by logging into the website, of course, canadianspeakers.org, and then you will be able to go to business webinars on the bottom left-hand corner. And so the latest interview was on the 14th of February with Michael Lossier, of course, who is the international best-selling author of The Law of Attraction. That was a pretty fascinating interview, so I really encourage you to take advantage of that. You will find my interviews there with Clint Greenleaf from Greenleaf Publishing, Martin Perlmutter from Speaker Spotlight, Rebecca Morgan, so the list goes on. So it's getting to be a really great little resource there for our members, and I really encourage you to go there and download them and put them on your iPod or your iPhone or your iPod or your BlackBerry and listen to them as you travel, because it's a really great way for you to get some easy professional development. So today is a one-hour interview. There will be time for a little Q&A as we go through. I'll give you some instructions on that. Your login information should have given you a website that you can link on, and when you go there, you will see that there is a question box on the bottom left-hand corner. So you can submit your questions there, and I will do my best as we go through this interview to keep an eye on those, and when we have time is to ask, I'll refer those questions over to David. So let me tell you a little bit about David Meerman Scott. So he is a marketing strategist, a keynote speaker of high demand internationally, and a seminar leader. Now his book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, has sold over 250,000 copies internationally. It's been on the Business Week bestseller list for 6 months. It's now published in more than 25 languages, and I'm sure those numbers can already be updated. He's also the author of the New Rules of Social Media series, the Real-Time Marketing and PR, Newsjacking, Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead, Worldwide Rave, Eyeball Wars. I mean, this is a prolific author, and I think that, you know, I was just speaking briefly to David before we got started that if there's one message that we should all take away from this call is the value of content and being excellent at creating content that has real value. So David is a recovering vice president of marketing for two publicly traded technology companies. He's also Asia marketing director for Knight Ritter. He's one time was the largest newspaper and electronic information companies in the world. Now his blog is really worth visiting. It is Web Inc. Now, W-E-B, Inc., I-N-K, Now, N-O-W.com. It's a must read, I think, for anybody that is in our business or has any interest in marketing. He also contributes to Huffington Post. He's a contributing editor to eContent Magazine. And he has presented in over 20 countries on four continents. His clients include Cisco and Hewlett-Packard, Microsoft, U.S. Air Force, and the list goes on. David, welcome to Business Growth Series.
Thank you, Hugh. It's great to be here.
Well, you know, I am really excited, and of course, as a diligent interviewer, I went out and, of course, got your book, which I am ashamed that I haven't read it earlier, and I totally think this is a must-read for anybody that has any interest in marketing because it is so current. And at some point, I also want to talk to you a little bit, David, about the process that you went through in creating that book and how, how I understand it kind of went from a blog to a book, but we'll get to that.
Okay. Well, thanks for reading the book, because a lot of people don't who interview me, so it makes it for a better conversation.
Well, it is, you know, I am finding that where I am with my company, with how I'm growing my company, and how I'm becoming more and more interested in creating excellent quality content, that this is so important for me to understand is, you know, what do I do with the content? So we'll get to that. One of the big themes in this book, of course, and it's right in the title, is that you're saying there's new rules to marketing and PR, right?
Absolutely.
And, you know, so, you know, some of the old rules, according to you, included, you know, the only way to get ink was through media. in terms of, you know, being published or being written about. Companies communicated to a journalist through press releases. Companies had to have significant news before they were allowed to write a PR. Advertising, you're saying now, is a money pit of wasted resources. Can you tell me a little bit about the old rules and the new rules?
So in my mind, there's four ways to get attention today, and that's for everyone. It's for big businesses, small businesses, people like us who are professional speakers. The four ways are, number one, you can buy attention. You can advertise. You can advertise in a magazine or a newspaper or send out direct mail. In other words, you can pay for attention. The second way is you can beg for attention. So you can reach out to members of the media and say, please, please, please write about me because I'm a really good person, or whatever you say. You use the media as your mouthpiece. The third way is you can do direct sales. You can either yourself pick up the phone and start calling people, or you can hire somebody to do that for you. So those three ways have been around for a long time. I'm not saying they're going away. I'm not saying they're necessarily wrong or bad. But the fourth way is the way that I do it, and it's the way that thousands and thousands of other people, including hundreds of speakers, do it, is to earn attention by publishing information for free on the web. So information like blog posts, Twitter feeds, social networking profiles, videos on YouTube and Vimeo and other places. Essentially, you create a huge amount of content that brands you as an expert in whatever field it is that you're a professional speaker in. And then that content that you put out there on the web, number one, gets indexed by the search engines. So when people are entering in search terms to find an expert, they'll find you. And number two, it gets shared by people. They read it and say, oh, this is pretty interesting, and they pass it on to somebody. Maybe they pass on a link through email. Maybe they pass on a link because they blog about you, or they tweet about you, or they add you to their LinkedIn by doing an update on LinkedIn. These are the ways that you can generate attention today for no cost. I mean, yes, it takes time. Don't get me wrong. It's not like it's free in terms of the amount of time it takes, but it doesn't need to cost a single penny to be able to create that content. That's exactly what I've been doing since I started my business about 10 years ago. I've never once placed a sales call, and I speak every single week.
You know, and I think, you know, I think that in itself is something worth noting, is that 10 years is not a lot of time to have built up the social media presence and the presence you have internationally as, you know, as an author and a speaker. So I think that that's important to note. You know,
mean, it does take time. I mean, it's not like if you start a blog today, you're all of a sudden, you know, going to be raking in the $30,000 speaking gigs on a regular basis. But if you do diligently create content starting today, every single day for the next couple of years, there's no doubt that your business will increase.
Probably the most tweeted quote from you is, "Think like a publisher, not a marketer."
Actually, it's similar to that. It's, on the web, you are what you publish.
Uh-huh.
That's the most tweeted quote. On the web, you are what you publish. What do I mean by that? On the web, you are what you publish. It is just that simple. If somebody is looking for you, or someone's looking for a speaker and they don't know who you are, they go to the web. And so if you're creating fantastic content on the web, you're publishing great content on the web, you're great. Somebody enters your name into a search engine and they find you. That's fantastic because you've got a whole bunch of stuff out there. You've got people talking about you. You've got videos. You've got text-based content. You've got images. You know, great, great stuff. If you're publishing nothing on the web, you're nothing, because then if somebody enters your name into a search engine, you know, they might find your boring old speaker website that looks like every other boring old speaker website, and that's it. And, you know, maybe a couple of links to some places that you spoke, and that's it. On the web, if you're not publishing anything, you're nothing. And then finally, and this is the worst part, and I don't think there's probably very many people on the call in this situation, if on the web you're publishing crap, then you are crap on the web. You know, if you're just, you don't care, you're putting out junk, you know, whatever. It's just not working. It's not going to work for you. It's absolutely a truism when it comes to creating information on the web. And let's be honest, that's how people are hiring speakers. You know, they'll ask a friend in the same industry, or they'll ask a friend in who's hired speakers before and say, gee, you know, I'm looking for a speaker at my next conference. Do you know anybody? Mm-hmm. Well, 9 times out of 10, what that person will do is send a link. They'll send a link to your speaker video, or they'll send a link to your blog, or they'll send a link to the Amazon page for your book, or they'll send a link to your website, or they'll send a link to your Facebook profile or your Twitter feed. That's how people will introduce you. You never know what happens, but that's exactly how it happens. Mm-hmm. So that's why if you're publishing great information, you're great, and that's why you can end up having, without ever placing a sales call, having all sorts of people reach out to you and say, please, will you speak at my event?
Mm. So good. You know, I started last year, as I was saying to you earlier, that with webinars for my company, which is a new thing. And of course, I thought, oh gosh, I should sell them. That, you know, that was the advice I'd gotten. So I put a price tag on.
Such a crappy advice that is.
You know, and there I was, and you know, and in fact, I was making money. And I thought, gosh, look at me, aren't I clever? And then I thought about it, and I realized, what's the point of going to all this work for 20 people? And as soon as I made them free, put in, you know, high quality content, well, the one I ran this morning, for example, we had 363 people on the call. So, you know, that to me is far more valuable than 20 people that are paying me a few bucks. So,
right.
To me, I think you hit on a key point there, which is that this is free content.
Yeah. So there's a couple aspects of free I want to touch on. That's one thing that you've got. You've got the idea that that you can have something that you would normally charge some money for, and instead make it free and have that content get spread far and wide. The other one, which is related, but a lot of people misunderstand, is should you put the requirement that somebody give up an email address on a piece of content in order to put it out there? And I think the vast majority of people make a terrible mistake when they require an email address to download a white paper, or they require an email address to watch a video, or they require an email address to get some other piece of content. Because what you're doing is you're putting an incredible adversarial relationship between you and somebody as soon as you require an email address to give away content. You're saying to them, I'm not going to give you anything unless you give me something first, which is your personal information. That's like going into a bar and saying, you're really cute, but before I ask you out, I need to know who you are, so you know, please give me your tax return. I mean, it's very, very similar to that. And so I think that what you've got to do is make it completely and utterly free, because then more people will share your content. More people will talk it up. You'll get a lot more inbound links. You'll get higher search results. So let me give you an example of that. I write a lot about marketing. That's my topic. If you go to Google, and I'll do it right now to make sure I'm not a liar, and you type in the phrase viral marketing, you will see, hopefully, let me just do it here, because sometimes Google changes its algorithm. You will see in the 1, 2, 3, 4th position, at least on my screen, an ebook I wrote called The New Rules of Viral Marketing. It's a completely free ebook. Go ahead and download it. There's 17,300,000 hits for the phrase viral marketing. And there I am in the 4th position, or at least on my screen, I'm on the 4th position. Why? Because the information was valuable, it was free, and lots of people shared it. I've had well over 2 million downloads of that document. And that drives people to buy my books. That drives people to hire me to speak. If I had slapped a requirement of an email address on that, which is what so many speakers do, they say, well, I want to know who's downloading my stuff so I can contact them. I can add them to my newsletter. If I had done that, I would have had probably a few thousand downloads, and there is no freaking way that my content would be that high in the search engines.
Mm-hmm. I know in your book you gave an example where the company that you interviewed said they were getting 16 times more downloads because there was no registration requirement.
Yeah, the people who have done A/B testing on this, it's mm-hmm. anywhere between about 15 and 50
wow.
times the number
wow.
of downloads. 50, imagine that, 50 times.
Yeah.
So 50 times, I mean, I don't need to do the math for you, but if you would have gotten 1,000 downloads over a course of a year where people were giving up their email addresses, all of a sudden you've got 50,000 downloads. And let's not ignore the search engine benefit, because people don't link to reports that require a download. They do link to reports that are totally free.
Mm, very good. I like your suggestion in your book, David, where you said, well, if you really want the registration, then you can include that invitation in the free download, and on the second iteration, then they could maybe, you know, opt in or something. But the first
that's
one
right.
should be, right?
Yeah, that's right. I call that a secondary offer. The first offer, totally free.
Great.
The secondary offer is, okay, join my newsletter or subscribe to my blog or whatever it is, and that's when you can capture their email.
Great. You know, another line that caught my attention was people want authenticity, not spin. Can you tell me a little bit about what you meant when you wrote that?
Yeah, I think the way to create great content is to create information that's valuable for the people that you're trying to reach. Rather than create information that seems like it makes sense to you from the perspective of trying to sell something, you need to put away your ego, and you need to say, okay, the people I'm trying to reach are, you know, sort of get in your mind who they are, maybe even do research to figure out who they are, and then create information especially for them. The things that I see a lot, and this is particularly true, I don't know why it is, particularly true of professional speakers who are also, who also have information products to sell, is it's fairly hypey. You know, it's act now or your opportunity will disappear. You know, spend $50 with me and I'll give you this free DVD package worth $879. And that just feels funky, and it feels it feels spin-like. It just doesn't feel authentic. Authentic is when you create great stuff, put it out there for free, people get attracted to you, and then they're eager to do business with you. Not the sort of approach where you're kind of subtly trying to coerce people into doing something.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And so it really is based on being a publisher, as you call it, right? So there's another great quote that's often repeated from you, which is it think like a publisher, not a marketer?
Right. So exactly. So if you think about what most people do when they're creating their websites or their marketing materials, is they think like a marketer. They think like an advertiser. They think they have to talk up their product. You know, what's their product? It's their ability to speak or their books or whatever it is. And that just doesn't work as well as thinking like a publisher and creating that great information. And so it's really hard for people, particularly if they've had any marketing experience, to do this. But the challenge becomes, okay, how do I not think like a marketer and instead think like a magazine or a newspaper or a television station and create content accordingly? And, you know, that content, like I said earlier, could be in the form of videos or text-based contents like blogs or Twitter feeds or photographs or infographics, all sorts of types of information that you can create that will help you to do this. But again, it requires thinking like a publisher. What does a publisher do? A publisher thinks about their audience first, and the publisher creates something that's valuable for their audience. And journalists, the people who are creating the content for a publisher, are essentially storytellers. They're creating a story arc within their pieces of content. You know, many times they'll put in conflict as a way to drive action and to get people interested. And I just very, very rarely see that when it comes to people who are trying to market themselves, because they tend to drop into advertising copywriter mode, you know, act now, you know, free trial, you know, all this sort of stuff, which just isn't as effective. I mean, the people who are hiring you have seen it all before. They've seen all of the hype. They've seen all of the egotistical bullshit. And what they react to are people who are genuinely providing valuable information on their website, because by definition that means that that person is likely to be able to deliver valuable information when they get a chance to speak from the podium.
Listen, this is so fantastic. So, David, let's take a little side topic here that I think is totally related to that. So Chris Anderson's theory, The Long Tail of Marketing, and the consumer persona. So here I am. I'm a speaker. I'm a seminar leader. I'm a coach. I want to write content. Thinking about, you know, and maybe I need you to kind of explain what Chris Anderson meant by the long tail of marketing, but, you know, thinking about those concepts, like who do I write for, in other words?
So the theory of the long tail basically says that when you're selling something over the internet, that because there's no cost of warehousing, that you can sell all the way down to an audience of one. That's why in a physical bookstore or a physical record store, you really, no matter how big the physical store was, even the really big city stores, there was a finite number of books that could be stocked, or a finite number of record albums that could be stocked, which means you had to stock the hits, and you had to stock the backlist, big sellers. You know, so you walk into the record store, and of course it would be the Rolling Stones and the Who and the Clash and whatnot. But if you wanted an obscure band, you know, from New Zealand, you couldn't get it. But if you go to Amazon or you go to Chapters or you go to some other online site, they stock literally millions of pieces of content, and they'll stock something even if it only sells one copy a year. So that's the idea of the long tail, because they don't have to physically warehouse it in stores. They do have a warehouse somewhere, but they don't have to warehouse it in stores. They can sell to even an audience where they're selling one copy a year. Now, the same thing is true of almost any product. So if you're a speaker, you can be a niche speaker, and you can be the very best and most sought-after speaker in a niche market. And so what that means is that it might be, and I can't guarantee this is always going to be the case for everybody, but it might very well be that if you're, and I'll do it from the perspective of marketing because that's what I know, you may not want to say, I'm a marketing speaker. You may instead want to say, I'm a speaker about nonprofit search engine optimization marketing. Mm-hmm. So you've become a big niche. You created a niche for yourself. Not only you're not just a marketing speaker, you're a speaker for nonprofits. You're not just a nonprofit marketer. You're a nonprofit marketing speaker who's an expert in search engine marketing. And so you can then become the world's number one speaker in a particular niche. So you have to say to yourself, okay, if I'm going to take that strategy, if I'm going to become this, you know, global number one in this niche, how big is the niche? Is it likely to grow? Am I going to be able to feed myself on it? Because if you do focus on that and then you write a book on that subject, well, gosh darn it, you can absolutely become that number one speaker in that niche. And that, for many, many people, that's a lot better than trying to be one of 500 in something, in a category that's much more broad.
Mm-hmm. So good. Let's talk about blogging now. I mean, most people on this call have a blog. Most people are familiar with how to create the blogs. But, you know, there's a couple of approaches that you took that I thought were pretty unique, and I wanted to explore those. So first of all, your book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, now, as I understand it, that in 2006 was an e-book. Is that correct?
Yes and no. So yeah. I started blogging in 2004. And by the way, blogging is one of those terms, I wouldn't use it anymore. If I were starting, and I don't typically refer to my content as a blog, because for some people the term blog has a negative connotation. You know, call it an information site. Call it a content resource, whatever you want to call it. You don't have to call it a blog. So anyway, I created a an informational resource as part of my business back in 2004, and started writing a lot about marketing and public relations. And then in 2005, I wrote an ebook called The New Rules of PR. An ebook, in this case, just a PDF document. If you want an example, that New Rules of Viral Marketing one I talked about a couple minutes ago, that's a good one to look at as an example. PDF document, totally free, no registration required, landscape orientation, so it fits really beautifully onto a computer screen, really well designed, really well edited. So anybody who sees it, anyone who reads it will say, whoa, this is really valuable. So you get a lot of pass-along value. I did that ebook, and I basically used a bunch of blog posts that I had written previously as the starting fodder to create that ebook. It got 50,000 downloads in the first month, that ebook. So it did really, really well, The New Rules of PR, it's called. And then I approached a couple of publishers and said, well, you know, I'm a speaker. I write this content, and I did call it a blog in that case, on my blog. I've got 50,000 downloads of this ebook in just a month. Let's do a book together. And they said, sure, let's do a book together. So I got a book deal really easily. And then that book I wrote throughout much of late 2005. I wrote throughout 2006, basically all of 2006, to create the first edition, hardcover edition of The New Rules of Marketing and PR. And what I did was I wrote a lot of blog posts that I ended up using as parts of chapters for the book. And the people who commented on my blog, you know, I would use that as valuable fodder for what would go into the book itself. If people liked a blog post, because I knew that they liked it because they commented on it, and they pass it around, they reblogged it, whatever, then, I'm onto something here. If I did a blog post and just sat there and nobody talked about it, okay, maybe that was a bit of a dud of an idea. So I used the blog as a great way to create the book. And then the book itself, the first edition came out in June of 2007. I've gone through three editions now. And as you said at the top when you introduced me, it's also out in 25 other languages, so the book's doing quite well. And that's how I've done my other books since then. I've done, I think, 5 books since then. And so I'll draw on if I find myself writing in certain themes on my blog, I'll say, wow, you know, the last 6 months I've been writing a lot about this particular topic. Maybe there's a book there. Mm-hmm. And then I'll talk to my – now – my publisher, I use John Wiley & Sons. I'm one of Wiley's best-selling authors, so I don't have to do proposals or anything anymore. So I'll just call up my publisher and say, what do you think about this idea? And you know, they'll usually say yes. So it's not a big deal for me anymore. But when I find myself writing on a particular topic, I think, wow, well, maybe there's a book there. I wonder if this is, you know, this is something I can do. And that's how Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead was born. It's a book I wrote, and you know, I found myself writing and speaking a lot about the Grateful Dead. I said, oh, shoot, maybe there's a book there. And then when you do that, you know, you might have a quarter of the book already written just by copying and pasting blog posts into a manuscript.
By the way, I got a chuckle of it. I noticed that you're on the board of advisors for the, is it the Grateful Dead?
The Grateful Dead Archive at the University of California in Santa Cruz.
In Santa Cruz, that's great. Yeah. That is great. There's a claim to fame.
Hey, take everything I can get.
Now, you know, so what I loved about what you just said there, David, was that you used your blog to sort of experiment, to test the market.
That's right.
Also, you noticed what you were blogging about. So you noticed your own writing and looked for themes. You know, when I read your book, I was thinking, wow, that, you know, one of the things I really admire about the way that you put the book together, and I'm sure your other ones as well, is you actually dig into each topic. Like you phone people up. You know, you interviewed, you know, Gerard Vrooman from Cervelo, Cycles, right?
And he's such a cool guy. We've actually become friends. We went on a
really?
Yeah, we went on an exhibition to Panama last month, and so I was with him for a whole week. Are you a triathlete?
I'm a big fan.
So he's a really cool guy, and by the way, do you know he just sold that company for a lot of money?
He built that
company on the ideas in my book, and I'm not taking any credit for his success of his company, but he took everything I talked about, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, applied it to This Cervelo Cycles, great racing bicycle company. You know, their bikes have won the Tour of France for big deal stuff. Built the company up, and he just sold it. I think it was 2 weeks ago the deal closed.
So a
very big success.
But
you're right. What I do is there's a couple things I like doing with my books. And remember, I write about marketing. So number one, I like to write about stories no one else has written about. You know, if I read another story about freaking Zappos, I'm going to shoot myself in the head. I mean, care less about Zappos, right? So I look for stories that haven't been told.
Right.
I started writing a lot about Boeing. No one had talked about Boeing's marketing in any big way until I started to do it. And then there's funny, a bunch of other people have too, which is fine. I don't care about that. So that's another example. Number one, I want to talk about stories that people hadn't heard before. Number two, I want to do it by actually interviewing the people who've done it so that I can have them tell us, the readers, what they did in their own words, so I quote them in the book. And then those start out as stories on my blog. And then, again, I said earlier, if people like it, they comment on it, they tweet it and whatnot, I can see that. And then, wow, that story seem to take off. You know, it's earmark that one for the next book.
Well, and this, you know, and your book really has, there are some great studies, you know, like I love the example from Tourism Queensland of the best job in the world.
Yeah.
You know, or Mike Peterson with his Perform Better Golf and how he's,
right.
You know, and to me, that's a great example, by the way, of this idea of a consumer persona, you know, where he says, I write for the 60-year-old golfer who has rapidly declining physical capabilities.
Yeah,
I thought,
exactly.
Well, there you go. That's it. Like,
yeah.
Every time Mike sits down to write content, he's thinking, I'm writing for a 60-year-old golfer with rapidly declining. You know, that is, to me, what we all could take. We all learn from that. So the general public is great, but we're probably not going to sell to them. We need to get
No, and that's right? Another aspect of this niche marketing we talked about before. You know, you can try to be the best speaker about tourism in the world, but you know, and good for you if you can pull it off, because you'll be making a lot of money and speaking all the time, or whatever the topic is. But think about who the audience is and niche it up. So this guy Mike Peterson, exactly. He didn't say I'm going to be the best golf coach in the world. He said I want to coach older guys who are starting to decline and how they can do exercises to keep their game further into their life than they might otherwise.
Hey, David, this is great. Tell me about, on the topic of blogs or whatever we're now going to call them.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of commenting on other bloggers. I mean, you do this a lot. You talk about the successes you've achieved through that. Can you tell us a little bit about how you do that and what the strategy is?
Sure. So, you know, if you have a particular area that you focus in, you know, one of the best ways to get known is to comment on other people's blogs. So find those other blogs or new, they can be news stories as well, they don't have to be blogs, but places that other people are creating content similar to the content that you're creating. And then you just pop in and say something that furthers the conversation. If you're going to do that, it's always the best to have somewhere that you point people back to. It's almost always best to do that point people back to your own content. So you don't just give your name. You say you give your name plus a link to the URL where you're creating content. And it's just a nice, particularly if you haven't started to blog, you haven't started to create your own content, that's a good way to start exercising your voice, getting a sense for what it is you like to write about, is by leaving comments on other people's content first.
Mm-hmm. And you were recommending Technorati or a Google blog search?
Yeah, I would just, you know, Google blog search is a good place to go. Technorati is another good place to go. But just, you know, poke around and see what blogs are out there in the niche that you're talking about or in your industry or in your geography, whatever makes sense for you and the sort of topics that you speak about.
Well,
And then just create content around that. Another thing that I've talked, is a really new and interesting idea I wrote this book called Newsjacking, which came out in late 2011, so about 4 months ago. The newsjacking is the idea of how can you draft off of something in the news in order to get media attention. And so as a speaker, this is a fantastic opportunity we have to watch what's going on in the real-time news world and then create a piece of content that will allow you to, you've got to do it in real time, but put that piece of content out there in real time, typically a blog post, so with the express purpose that the media will find it. So as an example, I did a blog post this, I literally pushed the button on this blog post at the moment that you started this call. You and I spoke 10 minutes before this call started. I was finishing up the blog post in that 10 minutes. I pushed the button at exactly 3 o'clock Eastern time on this blog post. The blog post is President Obama Newsjacking Republicans on Super Tuesday. So you know here in the States, we've got this Republican presidential primary going on. I mean, if you want some drama and theater and comedy all rolled into one, just watch that. No more, I'm not going to say any more on that aspect of it. But President Obama gave his first White House news conference in 6 months today. And today is Super Tuesday. It's the most important day of the entire Republican primary season. So all the Republican, there's 10 U.S. states voting in the Republican primary today. And Obama chose today, this afternoon at 1:30 Eastern, as the time he was going to do his news conference, and he hasn't done one literally in 6 months. So what he was doing is he was newsjacking the Republicans. What I mean by that is he was saying to the media, you know, okay, you want to cover me? Cool, you cover me. I'm going to talk about this so that tomorrow morning's newspaper will have not only the Republicans but also Obama on the cover. Tonight's television news broadcasts and radio broadcasts and today's electronic content on Google News and whatnot will all be talking about President Obama's news conference. But you can do that too. Pick something going on in the news, find a way that you're related to that, and then create content on that. So also in this blog post, I put a little example of that. This woman named Krista Johnson is a noted expert on homeschooling. And one of the candidates in Republican primaries, a guy called Rick Santorum, has homeschooled some of his children. He started talking about homeschooling a lot. So Krista Johnson wrote a blog post saying, her title of the blog post is "There Isn't One Face of Homeschooling," and she basically took Santorum to task and said, "You don't speak for homeschoolers." So her, what she's trying to do there is draft off of something in the news in order to try to get her story out there at a time when the market is focused on it. And that's exactly a fantastic technique that anybody listening on this call can do, that you think about, what is my expertise, when are people talking about it in the media, and how can I create a piece of content with the express purpose of having it be found in the search engines as reporters are looking for background information on a particular story. So if somebody wants to talk about homeschooling, they can quote Rick Santorum, but now they're looking for other people to quote. Maybe they can find Krista Johnson's blog post, they quote her.
Right, and because of that strategy, now she becomes a more valuable resource, and it's not just about, promoting herself, right? She's actually saying, something we could all benefit from.
That's right. Now, here's why this technique is so different and why so few people do it. It requires that you have to pay attention to what's going on in the news, and you have to react instantly. Yet what most people do is they have a campaign mentality around creating their content. Mm-hmm. They create their content on some kind of timeline. So they say to themselves, I better do a blog post, so I'll do one next Monday. And then, next Monday rolls around, they crank out something. Or they think, I've got this new product that I'm putting out. I'm putting out a new white paper, whatever it is, 2 weeks from now, and that's when I'll focus on creating content. This turns it on its ear and says, you focus on content when the time is right. And if the time is right this second, that's when you create the content. Now, in my case, I wanted to blog about President Obama newsjacking the Republicans on Super Tuesday. Today is Super Tuesday. That news conference started at 1:30, ended at 2:30. When the conference finished, I started writing my blog post. I was not finished at 10 minutes to 3 when you and I started talking. So I multitasked and finished up the blog post, pushed the button at 3 o'clock. The time was right. I had to put it out. I did not even want to wait till the end of this call in order to put out that content. And there's so few people who have that real-time mentality when they create their content. They focus too much on their own time rather than the right time. That the when the market is right, you got to do it now. And it doesn't matter what you're doing, you know, you got to create that content now.
I'm multitasking right now because I'm reading your blog post.
Yeah.
That's good. That's really good. Okay, that's a great, I love it. It's a great real-time example for us. Okay, here's a small little detail, David, and I'm not sure if you do it consistently or not, but I noticed that you talk about at the bottom of your blogs that you would actually include your email, as you've said, in quotes, as humans read it. So in other words, you know, I guess it would be like David Meerman Scott, DOT.
Yeah.
Are you still doing that? Do you think that's a good idea? I noticed other people are doing that as well.
I do that. I mean, you know, spam artists find your email, they find your email. But I, on my website and other places where the data, where the my email address can be harvested, I type it as David, and then in parentheses at AT, and then David Meerman Scott, and then dot D-O, letter D, dot letter O-T, O, letter T, com. And so that way it can't be harvested as an email address.
Okay, great.
By the way, one other thing is my name, David Meerman Scott. There are hundreds and hundreds of David Scotts. If you were to go to Google and type in David Scott, you would get the David Scott who was the commander of Apollo 15 who walked on the moon. You would get the David Scott who is a member of the U.S. Congress from Georgia, the state of Georgia. You would get David Scott who is an Ironman triathlon champion. And so I realized 10 years ago when I started my business that I was not going to be able to compete with these very famous David Scotts. So I started using my middle name, which is Meerman. And so I, professionally, I'm David Meerman Scott, and I'm the only David Meerman Scott in the world. So if somebody's looking for me, David Meerman Scott, the speaker, they type in my name, they find me and only me.
Hmm.
And so anyone out there listening who is just getting going in this world of professional speaking, and, you know, maybe it's hard to find your name in the search engines. If your name is John Smith or something, then, you know, then you might want to consider how you can make yourself unique, perhaps using your middle name or some other way so that you can be instantly found in the search engines.
Nice. Great. Good one. You know, we have covered a lot of ground, and I still want to get on to a few other things that we've promised the listeners, but I do want to open the lines right now for David, and the way you need to let us know you have a question for him is to push *2 on your telephone, and then that will raise your hand, and then I will unmute you, and if we don't get any calls that way, then we will go to the typed-in questions, which I have a big, long list of already. So if you'd like to ask David a quick question, then just push *2 on your telephone, and we will unmute you, and then you can go ahead and ask the question. While we're waiting for that, I will ask you a question, David. So it's one
sure.
That's come in, and it refers to an earlier comment, and this listener is asking, what about attention span for a story? So James is asking, you know, you said when you think about when you talk about thinking like a publisher and storytelling, do you believe that people have the attention span for a story? Do we have to package, quote, stuff in brief U.S. news-style stories?
Well, I don't think there's a yes or no answer to that. What I do, my style, is I create content in all different types, and this seems to work very well for me. I'm quite active in Twitter. That's 140 characters. I mean, that is as bite-sized as you can get. I also quite like a service called Instagram. Instagram is a photo site, which I quite like. And that's real quick, instant photos I do with my iPhone, real easy stuff. That's kind of the bite-sized content. Then I go up to blog posts, you know, 500 words, something like that. Some are shorter, some are longer. That's sort of medium-sized type of content. On the image side, you know, something like an infographic also, you know, that size, that length of content. The next level up are my ebooks, you know, 2,500 to 5,000 words. And my speeches, you know, an hour speech. That's the next form of content that I create. And then the long form, very long form content are my books, 50,000 to 70,000 words, and my full day seminars, you know, 6 hours of content. So I look at, in my mind, I want to create on a regular basis content of all of those different lengths. And that over time, I'm going to appeal to people who like bite-sized chunks, people who like real quick images, people who like a little bit longer, sort of, you know, AP-style length stories, and then longer forms.
Great. Good one. Thank you. I've got a caller in Pincher Creek. I'm going to unmute you.
Where's that?
Oh, you got to love Pincher. You got to love Pincher Creek. So if you just say your name, please, and then what's your question for David?
And where Pincher Creek is.
Yes. My name is Risa, and I live just east of the Rockies in southwestern Alberta, 60 miles north of the Montana border.
Ski areas up there?
Not far away, that's right.
Nice.
Ski and, of course, a national park, which is wonderful to go to, and boat and all that stuff. My question is, and it's something I've been told about by other people, keep the grammar and the vocabulary down to grade 6 level, which I don't much enjoy doing. It feels inauthentic and stooping to conquer, and I'm not interested in doing that. What do you do about that in the way you express yourself? I haven't read any of your blogs yet.
In my case, what I do, I just write naturally. And I think that if you're trying to write up or down, in your case down, I would never recommend going down to a sixth grade level. I think you want to figure out who are you trying to reach. You know, I just finishing up this great book. I love Neil deGrasse Tyson. He just did a book called Space Chronicles. It came out like 3 days ago, and of course I've already bought it and almost finished. He's an astrophysicist. If you're an astrophysicist and you're giving an academic, you're writing an academic paper about astrophysics. I mean, and you're a professional speaker to astrophysics audience, which he is. The last thing you want to do is write in a sixth grade level. I mean, God. So I think you think, okay, who are you trying to reach out to? Who is your audience? If you're a professional speaker and you speak to grade schools, well, sure, maybe you want to use smaller words, but I think you want to focus it to the audience that you're trying to reach rather than, you know, what some expert says.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
In my case, I just write what feels naturally to me. People say that my blog posts and my book feel like I'm having a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I use contractions. I use colloquialisms. Does that sound right? I use slang. I'll use paragraphs that have only one word. I'll say nonsense with a period and then, you know, start a new paragraph. That works for me. That's very casual style. Other people use a very formal style. I'm comfortable with the casual style, but I certainly don't dumb it down.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Risa. That's a great question, actually. Yeah, and I think that maybe a good rule would be to think about, well, how do you actually talk when you're live with the audience? And that's probably how you should be writing, because when you're speaking live, you can usually get immediate feedback as to whether or not what you're saying makes sense to them and they resonate with it.
I think that's true. I think also some industries use a lot of jargon. I don't think that's a reason to include a lot of jargon, but I think you need to be conscious of the jargon. You know, if somebody were to say, well, he doesn't even know what, you know, what this particular word is because he's never used it before, what, you know, whatever. I think you have to be conscious of the jargon. But generic jargon, like mission critical and cutting edge, never use that crap. That'll you know, that's just awful stuff.
I never
use that stuff. But industry jargon, you know, you may need to use sometimes if you're trying to reach a particular industry to speak.
Yeah, I think everyone should read the section in your book on gobbledygook where you.
There's actually a free. I've got that as a free ebook. Yeah, it's
that
called.
Is the, great.
If you go to Google and type in Gobbledygook Manifesto. you'll get a free ebook about gobbledygook that I wrote.
That's really great. Okay, David, I'm going to put you on the spot. We got about 11 minutes left. This has been really valuable, and I want to talk about three topics. And the first is speaker videos. So, in about 3 minutes, what is it that we do wrong? What should we be doing with speaker videos?
Okay, every speaker video I've ever seen is exactly the same. people hire either one or two cameras, and they stick the camera in the back of the hall, and then somebody comes out and speaks, and it's kind of this you know, sort of trained on the speaker. If there's a second camera, it's sort of sitting off on the side somewhere. Most speaker videos are cut off after 15 minutes. There's not, the entire speech isn't there because people are scared. Oh my God, I don't want to put out my whole speech because somebody might steal my content. I think it's time to totally transform speaker videos and make them a heck of a lot more interesting. So what I did, it's actually been a year now. I can't believe it's been a year, but what I did a year ago was I created what I thought was, for my business, a really new and interesting sort of speaker video. And I modeled it after what Radiohead does, the rock band, with one of their, they had a concert, and they invited members of the audience to film on their mobile phones and their handheld video cameras. And then they collected all of that footage and edited it into a crowdsourced video. So I did exactly the same thing. I had a keynote speech at a conference in Las Vegas, about 750 people in the room, and about a dozen people, maybe 15 people, were filming on their handheld video cameras. And I got all kinds of cool, funky angles. You know, one person in the front row, one person in the back row, people on the sides. And then people weren't just shooting me. They were shooting other things. They were shooting pictures of each other. They were shooting pictures of you know, people working on their computer screen while I was talking. And then the other thing I did was I encouraged people to tweet while I was speaking. And we used a hashtag. I then captured, as I was speaking, I had someone do this for me back in Boston, but I captured the Twitter stream. And then I hired a company to do one professional camera angle, which was kind of the establishing shot, and also record the sound of me doing the presentation. And then they edited the video up into a really fast-moving, fast-cut, multiple angle. I mean, think 15 cameras. Together with all the Twitter feed, and there were probably 300 or 400 tweets that came in, coming in on the bottom of the video. And I put it out. It's on, if you want to find it, it's dmscott.tv, dmscott.tv. And conference organizers love it because it shows action. You know, it's not just some freaking speaker video, you know. It's like one camera angle and just this guy droning on. No matter how good you are with one camera angle, it's really hard to show. And so, you know, I kind of reinvented the idea of a speaker video. I think it works really well. Whether you use that form or not, I'm not suggesting that you use what I did, but I think you just need to reinvent what it is that we're doing to get our information out there, you know, right. if create new content and new forms of content.
Great. Good one. I love that. I can't wait to see it. Okay, second, simple ways to support your event planner with social media.
Yeah, right. So event planners are always looking to book more tickets to their conferences, and they love the idea of speakers who are willing to create content for them. So what I do with all of the conference organizers who book me is I offer them to shoot a real short video introduction of my presentation. Everybody says yes. And so I do it here in my office. I have a little office in the town that I live in. It's not in my house. It's outside because I couldn't work at home. And I just have a little simple video camera that I set up on a tripod. I point it at myself. And I do a, you know, 1 minute, maybe 90-second video, and I say, hey, it's David Aaron Scott here. I'm really looking forward to Geek World. I can't wait to come out and talk to you guys about the real-time marketing and PR. And if you're going to learn this, you're going to learn that, and I'll see you then. And you know, get kind of animated and have some fun with it. And then I send it to them through, you know, one of the Dropbox, or you send it one of those programs, and they love it. And they put it right on their front page of their speaker page, of their speaker website. I mean, sorry, of their conference website. Now, how cool is it for? I mean, this is no more than 10 minutes work, and I'm including setting up the camera. it's 10 minutes work, and for 10 minutes work, your video of your face and you say, yeah, I'm David Aaron Scott, here's what I'm doing, and your name is in front of potentially 10 or 20 or 30,000 people who are going by that website thinking about whether they should go to that conference. And guess who else goes to those websites? Other conference organizers. So you help them, you help the conference organizers. They think you're a god for without even being asked, creating a video for them. And number one, and number two, you're helping yourself. I also will frequently tweet the events I'm going to be speaking at. I ask the conference organizers if they have any special codes they want me to tweet for discounts, and they love that. You know, special, you know, friend of David Meerman Scott code gets 10% off the ticket. Then they can measure how many people are coming in with that code, and they'll say to me, they often say to me when they see me at the event, oh my God, you sold 14 tickets to the conference. Thank you for that. And I'll do the math and I'll think, well, shoot, I just made half my fee by just sending one tweet that took 30 seconds to write. And think about the benefit that it helped the organizer, and think about what they're going to say if someone says, did you like working with David Meerman Scott? Well, shoot, yeah, he sold 14 tickets for me. He put this video up on my site. I'd love to have him come back.
Very cool. That's great. Okay, last one. Here we go. More successful on stage. You are an in-demand speaker, international. I know later this week you're at South by Southwest.
The week after that, I think I go to Warsaw, and then I go to Mumbai. Oh. I love the international gigs. They're fun.
Fantastic. So, a couple of quick tips. Once you get there, you know, you basically the money's in the bank, but what can you do to really wow the audience wow the audience and wow the event planner?
Well, I mean, gosh, we could spend 10 calls on,
sure,
on technique. What I do is I work on a new technique every speech. I try to think of just one thing I want to do slightly differently each speech, because my thing is every single time I'm given a stage, I want to improve. So I might work on my breathing, or I might work on my foot placement when I want to make a particular point. I might work on something like that. I think of it, as kind of each speech is a new training ground. The other thing I do is I'm kind of like the way a lot of comedians work, where a lot of comedians will introduce one new joke every set, and if it works, they'll keep it in and kick out another joke that they've been using before, or if it doesn't work, then they'll never tell that joke again. I kind of do the same thing. I tell new stories at each speech. But I think a couple of things in order to wow the audience and wow the organizer is I show a lot of slides, and none of them have any words on them. Actually, I shouldn't say none. Very few have any words on them. They're almost all images. So I'm not distracting people by using PowerPoint as a teleprompter, which so many speakers do. I mean, it's dreadful if, you know, people reading bullet points off their slides. You don't want people focused on words. You just use images. And something else I do that very, very few speakers do, and, you know, I'll go to conferences. I'll be there for the whole day, and no other speaker will do this. I'm the only one who'll do it. So I always go out into the audience. And you have to have a good reason to go out into the audience. But going out into the audience is extremely important, because human nature, there's been psychological research on this, human nature is such that if you're 20 feet from somebody, you don't develop any real bond with them. If you get 5 feet from somebody, you're into their personal space. And by being in somebody's personal space, they're more likely to bond for you. Now, here's the thing that's really interesting about this. If you go into the audience and you get into 5 or 10 or 20 people's personal space by getting within 5 feet of them, the entire audience, there could be you know, a lot of people there, will all bond. It's sort of a one person gets the actual 5 feet nearness, and the other people can appreciate the same kind of bond. It's a really, really interesting phenomenon. A couple weeks ago, I keynoted the NAMM conference in Los Angeles. That's North American Music Merchants, the largest music-oriented trade show in the world. And there were 1,287 people in my talk. And how do I know that? Well, they scanned the badges going into the room. That's how I know that. So I go out into the audience, and then many, many people came up to me, wow, that was a really great speech. You know, I really felt like you were connecting with me. And I didn't say, the reason is that. The reason you felt I was connecting to you is because I went out into the audience, and I was near someone else, but that was like 50 people away from you. I didn't tell them that. I just say, thank you. But that's the reason. The reason is because you've gotten off that stage, which is very much like a TV screen. You know, you're watching somebody on a stage with bright lights. It's exactly like watching someone on TV, and you and that's how people react to those who never leave the stage. It's just like you're watching someone on television. You don't actually have a bond with someone on television. And as soon as you get off that stage and go into the audience, you're developing that bond.
Nice. I love hearing that. I mean, to me, it's so important that after we do all of this other stuff around, you know, our marketing and our content and our preparation, that we get down to some really basic human needs. And, you know, at the end of the day, you might be an international star, but people want to know that you're real and that, you know, you have some connection with them, or at least, you know, have some sense of understanding of where they're coming from. So I think it's great advice.
Sure.
David, we are at the end of our call. Listen, this has been fantastic for me, and I'm sure for all the callers that we have had on the call. You set a record as far as the number of questions that have been coming in, most of which I think have been answered, I hope, from, you know, it seemed like every time someone asked a question and typed it in, you would say something that, you know, basically directly answered their question. So I hope
anticipating a question.
You were. It was great. Listen, if people have not gone out and gotten the new rules of marketing and PR, I really strongly encourage you to do that, as well as the downloads that David's been mentioning in this call, newsjacking and the Gobbledygook Manifesto and how to create viral media. So viral marketing, the new rules of viral marketing. I really encourage you to read some of what this man has been writing. It really is instrumental as far as what I'm doing in my business, and I think that you can also benefit from it as well. So thank you for that, David.
I appreciate that. And just an aside, if you do end up buying the new rules of marketing and PR, do make sure you're buying the third edition. I know some booksellers still stock the second edition or even the first edition, and you want to get the most current one, which is the third edition.
Yeah, good tip. That's great. Folks, if you're listening to this on as a recording, and whether you're listening, I guess, as live as well, you can always go and get those recordings. On April the 16th, Monday the 16th, I'll be interviewing Michael Port, who, of course, is the best-selling author.
He's my friend. Tell him I say hello.
Oh, great. Excellent. I will, indeed. Yeah, Michael Port, who's the author of Book Yourself Solid and other really valuable books. So, again, David, thanks so much for making the time for us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks again to Anthony Nijme in our Toronto office for doing all the technical work. And thanks for everybody for being on the call, and I really appreciate it. Go out and have a great day. Thanks again.